Hello and welcome to the Albion Obsessed podcast, an impromptu live edition, because why not? So we join you on this Tuesday evening, 2 days into the new year. So I hope you've all had a very happy new year so far. Granted, it's not that long into it. Let's see who we've got on the show today. Joining us 3 days into the new year from down under, we've got Phil. How are you, Phil? You're muted, bud.
Pardon me. I'm doing okay. A bit of a mission to get on this in time. Obviously utilizing the natural light as it is right now, a 6:30 a.m. kickoff time for West Ham this morning. Obviously we'll get into it, but I'm going okay. Thank you.
Good. And the long-awaited return of Mr. Aaron Stevens. How are you, sir? It's been a while, but you're back.
Yes, it has been a while. Yeah, I'm all right, mate. Thank you. Thank you very much. Happy New Year to everybody. Happy New Year.
Indeed, you do. So let's get straight into it, guys. Let's talk about the ball draw that was West Ham versus Brighton. Was it a ball draw? I think we're probably just a bit bitter because we didn't convert our chances. Probably quite an entertaining game for a neutral, but hey ho. Let's start with a starting lineup. Two changes. So it was the suspended Lewis Dunk and the injured Igor out, and Webster back from a lengthy injury, and Estupiñán having his first start since his injury as well. Phil, what did you make of the changes? Pretty forced, really.
Yeah, I think we're all a bit surprised to see Webster get the start. I mean, it's kind of happened a little bit lately where we don't know the detail on players, and then all of a sudden they're, you know, because the same thing happened with Estupiñán last week, I'm pretty sure. There was still no real update on whether he'd be available anytime soon, and sure enough, he just found his way onto the bench. Webster this week finds his way straight into the starting team, which was obviously a bit of a forced move. And then, yeah, you're sort of wondering what's going to happen in terms of the makeup of out wide a little bit further up the pitch as well. And James Milner gets the role there, and deservedly so after what we saw today. So, you know, I think all of us fans are starting to take all these constant tinkers in our stride. And we might be starting to see a little bit of light at the end of the tunnel in that space as well, as I'm sure we can kind of get into as we move through this podcast as well.
Definitely. As I say, Aaron, it's been a while since we've chatted to you. So let's just get a quick sort of overview of how you found this struggle, really, from the last few months with so many injuries. The starting lineups for you, obviously, we talk about it at length on the podcast many times and in the group chat. So they're becoming just a bit of a, okay, that's all we've got. How have you found the squad's reaction to those injuries?
I mean, this is probably our first proper year, realistically, where injuries have impacted us so much, really, since we come up to the Prem anyway. It's part and parcel of football. We've just had extremely bad luck this year compared to other years. And it just kind of shows that we're not where we need to be in terms of squad depth, where I think in the past, where we've always just scraped through, you know, And I think playing Thursday, Sunday, you know, for the last 2-3 months has taken its toll. And it doesn't surprise me it's happened. It was always going to be an interesting way of how we'll cope with Europe anyway. At the start of the season, we always said that. And I think the injuries, it just doesn't surprise me, to be honest. It doesn't. But hopefully, you know, we'll sign maybe 2 or 3 players in this window just to help us through the next sort of like 2-3 months. And then we'll have everybody back, hopefully, by March. And then we'll be back to all guns blazing, hopefully. Touch wood.
Yeah, definitely. Let's talk about the start of the game, Phil, because there are a few players out for West Ham as well. Nowhere near as affected as we are. But it sort of felt like both teams were sort of prodding and poking each other, seeing where each other were at and how much they were going to give to the game. What did you make of the first sort of 10, 15 minutes as Brighton found their feet in the London Stadium?
I did feel like we made more of a concerted effort to worry about not conceding goals than what we've shown at certain times throughout the season. I think Estupiñan's placement sort of spoke to that a little bit. When we had the ball, he was staying very back for his standards. And I know the commentator made a comment at one point about his kind of having to put his own handbrake on just to stop him from pushing up and playing that more naturally attacking style. And I think that spoke to the strategy that, perhaps we were just going to try and win, but win in a tighter way and not let it be, you know, this classic shootout that we've become accustomed to as Albion fans in recent times, certainly under Roberto De Zerbi. But to be honest, I don't mind that because I think plenty of us fans out there, myself included, have just been getting utterly frustrated at how easily we've been scored on, particularly in first halves, particularly at 0-0, where we just don't seem to be switched on straight away. And sometimes it takes conceding an early goal to kind of click into gear. Whereas the way that we sort of started this game, it seems like perhaps we took a slightly different approach to it, addressed things a slightly different way. I didn't mind that, frankly.
Yeah, no, I think you're spot on there, Phil. We've just got a comment in from the Loudmouth Football channel saying, your manager's really talented. I switch on the game every week and see a new player in the starting 11 and they look well settled. Brighton is bright. Aaron, you spoke earlier just on our squad depth. However, the young players that have come in have really stepped up to the plate this season. Do you think there's more gems yet to be unearthed that we may see at Stoke? I know I'm jumping ahead a little bit, but do you think there's a little bit more from this squad to see yet?
Yeah, no, I think so. I think, you know, the natural progression in any football club is you want to see your under-23s progressing to the first team. Not many clubs at this level do that. It's very rare they do. And I think we scored, 19 goals from teenagers last year. You know, that's a lot for a Premier League club to, granted, most of them are Evan Ferguson, but it's still not the point. It's still, we're giving youngsters an opportunity to play under one of the best managers in the world, in world football, playing an attractive style of football at a beautiful stadium, in a beautiful part of the world. There isn't, if I was a youngster right now, there is no more attractive club than Brighton if you want to progress. And that's why I think when we look at players we're looking to sign and they're linked with, you know, Man City, Man City, Madrid, etc., they're not going to play there realistically for another 2, 3, 4 years, realistically. Like, they'll have to bide their time and wait for their opportunities. Where at Brighton, the likelihood of you getting first team action, not straight away, but near enough, is pretty high, really. And I don't see why players would want to turn us down at the moment. You know, it's money related, realistically. And that's how I see it. I mean, we've got some fantastic youngsters coming through. They've been on the bench, obviously, the last sort of 2, 3 months. But I think Saturday will be where we'll first see the likes of, hopefully, you know, a handful of players from the under-23s given an opportunity, hopefully.
The finances shouldn't be a problem either. Sorry, Joe, just quickly too, because we've proven time and again that we're going to raise your value if you come to our club. Mm.
Exactly that. And that's the thing, is we're the only thing I'd be concerned that is that we if it does happen, we turn out to be another Southampton where we sell all our best assets all at once.
Yeah.
And then we struggle to replace them. I think we're not at that stage yet, but is it a sustainable philosophy of buy cheap, sell high. There's going to be a couple that fail at some point. Realistically, there has to be.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Phil, I just saw a really interesting comment again from Loudmouth Football, which is something you touched on towards the end of the game, especially given West Ham's tactics. Saying, what is baffling is West Ham ahead of you with such a lean squad. They'll be going down the league for sure. Bowen and Paqueta model can't single-handedly work for the remainder of the season. West Ham really are one or two injuries away from being a team that have to play like that against Brighton and to survive and get a result. Are you shocked that West Ham are as high as they are?
Yeah, like I was quite baffled at how they approached today's game. I know that you look at their bench and it looks extremely light. Well, hello, look at Brighton's bench. We don't have a centre back on there. We've got makeshift wing options. We really only have one out and out striker coming off the bench as well. It's not like we're, stacked for options right now either. And they're sixth on the table going into a really important game for them to make up ground on Tottenham, to make up ground on that top five. And it is condensed inside that top five as well. There's a little bit of a gap from five to six, but make up some ground there and you are right in the hunt. And they approached this game in a way where it was like from the outset, they were virtually happy to take 1 point away from it. And, you know, that they beat Arsenal recently. They beat Manchester United recently playing that way as well, where they did kind of luck into a couple of goals. And obviously, the manager's done his homework as well in terms of playing a Brighton team which has struggled to break down bottom 10 sides this season that want to deploy this low block, park the bus, get us on the counter. We understand all that. But for a team that is in theory supposed to be fighting for Europe in that race for the top six right now, that's beating good teams as well, I just couldn't believe how passive they were, how quickly they rolled over and went for the 1 point rather than trying to win this game. And if they're going to continue to play that way, good luck over the course of a long season. They're not in the race for Europe, if that's the best that they've got. And I was stunned at just how quiet it was there at the London Stadium as well. That place was dead silent. It's 0-0 and they've got fans walking out with 10 minutes to go. Like, what are they doing? Honestly, it was, I couldn't believe it, frankly. I thought it was a pathetic effort by the team and their fans out there today.
Yeah.
I think the thing with West Ham, I think when they lose Paqueta and they lose Kudus, it loses two of their main attacking threats, main creativity threats. And when they've had them against United and when they've had them against Arsenal, they're a very different team. Very, very different team. And it showed today or tonight, sorry, how much they relied on him a little bit. And Bowen was non-existent. You know, he was the only real threat really there. And obviously Ward-Prowse, we know what he can do. But without the other two with him, they haven't got much. And that's not, no disrespect to the players who started today for them, but I think it's a little bit harsh, and I think they'll still be top six, I reckon, somehow. I think when those players are back, they'll be fine, in my opinion. I think they're well drilled. Moyes knows what he's doing to a certain degree. He knows how to frustrate teams, but when he's not got his two main players, it's difficult. It is difficult.
Yeah, I think as well, if you take that West Ham performance and mirror it alongside the performance at the Amex, they did almost the same thing. However, caught us on the break with a couple of really good, powerful, quick players.
I don't know. I thought they were pretty good at the Amex, in my opinion. I thought they were just smart.
They were frustrators, though. Referring to what you said about Moyes coming to frustrate teams, he does his homework, and you have to give them credit for that for sure.
At the Amex, at the Amex, they were clinical as well. They created a few good opportunities. I think it was 3-1 in the end, and and they put them all in the back of the net. They only really created one or two half chances today. One of them could have easily ended up in the back of the net as well. But, you know, and I understand what you're saying as well, Aaron, but I mean, we've got all the same excuses. We, you know, both of our starting wingers are out. You know, some of our attacking options are out as well. So that's why I just can't really wrap my head around it, because, you know, we went into this game, or virtually our B team as well, but we're out there trying to win a game on the road.
Yeah, exactly that. Let's talk about our first real big chance of the game, I think. A lovely ball in from James Milner finds Pascal Gross, who darts into the box, losing his marker of James Ward-Prowse, heads it straight at the goalkeeper. There were a few of those today, Aaron. What did you make of Brighton's attacking outlet in the first half? There wasn't much to write home about.
Not really.
No.
Not really. That one chance, that was it. Not much else to be said. It was a pretty dull first half, let's be real.
Yeah. Do you think that when those chances are presented to Pascal Gross, who you would expect to put that in the back of the net, it's frustrating that he puts it straight at the keeper?
Yeah, it's one of those, it's either side the keeper is in kind of thing. You don't expect Gross to score those type of goals, because he's, you know, he's good in the air, to be fair, for a guy his size, but you don't expect him to score those, if that makes sense. If it was someone like Ferguson, perhaps, you know, yeah, who's a bit more aerial presence and he's just an instant sort of instinctive finisher, then maybe. But yeah, not Gross. I mean, Gross, like I said, he can finish, but not with his head, bless him.
Yeah, so we've got a couple of comments. BMR209 asks us about his thoughts, or getting our thoughts on the Sarmiento transfer to Ipswich on loan. We'll cover the transfers a little bit later in the show after we've spoken about the game. Obviously, the transfer window is now open. Hopefully, Brighton can do some January business. I think it's very much needed. Hello, El Dude Brothers. Curtis, how are you, my friend? Couldn't be bothered to come on the podcast today. I see you, Curtis. Mark Cohen says, not one JWP free kick. Good discipline. I think I can agree with that. And hello to Mark as well, who is surprised with West Ham, with their lack of want of a win, very much like you, Phil. So yeah, hello to everyone in the comments, and hope you enjoy the show and get involved as we go. Phil, you said before halftime, we need to get to halftime 0-0 and not make any silly mistakes. Almost for West Ham. I think it was Mavropanos, I don't know if I said that right, who almost nicked in before halftime. Was you glad for the halftime whistle to come?
Yeah, I made the comment, the boys just have to keep their heads here. There threatens to be a moment just before halftime on either way. But it just felt like maybe there was a chance that we could lose our concentration just before that break. Obviously West Ham had that free kick. It was a pretty decent set play, you know, lobbing one over to the far post and putting in a really threatening ball. And that was kind of only their, I spoke to a couple of chances that they created. That was one of them. And that ball could have gone anywhere. There was a little bit of fortune for us that stayed out, didn't go goalward. And yeah, thankfully we did get to halftime 0-0, because we've conceded our fair share of goals on the stroke of halftime already this season. So it was good that this match wasn't one of those times.
Yeah, definitely. Good for the confidence to still be, you know, there or thereabouts in the game and have a really good chance to come out in the second half and put West Ham to the sword. And I think that's pretty much what we did. Aaron, let's talk about a couple of first half performances. First of all, Purvis Estupiñán, who obviously had his first start since coming back from injury. Him and Matoma gets injured, Purvis Estupiñán's back. Estupiñán's injured, Matoma was there. They're two players that work really well together. And do you think Estupiñán misses that outlet in front of him?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's vice versa. I think Purvis misses Matoma, Matoma misses Purvis. And I think that's why Matoma's not been as effective this year. And I think when they're both back, fit together, I think we'll see Mitoma come back alive, really. And this is the thing with fullbacks and wingers, they need to have a relationship. You look at Beckham and Neville, you look at, you know, all the best fullbacks and wingers in world football, they've always had support from either one of them. It's just how football teams should work. And when you're missing that consistency with the team selection through injuries or changes or whatever, it's going to impact people and impact performances. And I think it has done.
Yeah, definitely. Go on, Phil.
Reiterating what Aaron said. I mean, I'm just thankful that Purvis has got through these these two games. Great to see him back in the lineup. He offers so much, and as I sort of alluded to before, it will be interesting to see whether moving forward he does get the opportunity to play a higher style, play more attacking, or whether he will continue to be asked just to hang back a little bit more. I'm interested to see what happens there going forward. But you know, it was a different game today as well, because he did have James Milner in front of him. I'm sure we're going to get to him at some point, but he was exceptional, but in different ways to what to the threat that Mitoma offers out on that left side.
Yeah, definitely. Mark says a big shout out for Hinshelwood. We're going to get onto Hinshelwood a little bit later. I think he deserves his own podcast alone for his performances this season, for sure. Aaron, there was a surprise return to the starting 11 for Adam Webster. I say a surprise return to the starting 11 because it was known by De Zerbi that we were going to see him play part of the game. But did you expect him to start? And what did you make of his his 70 minutes as a span? Because I thought he was okay.
Yeah, I don't think we had much choice, really, to be honest. I think we kind of had to go with him, whether he would last 45 minutes, an hour. Managed to get 70 minutes out of him, which is good. Didn't really have much to do, though, really, defensively. I think if he did, I think we would... may have been interesting, because, a unfit Adam Webster can be a liability at the best of times. Even a fit Adam Webster can be a tiny bit of liability at the best times also. So, yeah, I mean, he done what he had to do. And I think with JP next to him, I think that's a massive help.
Yeah, definitely.
In the Albion Obsessed chat as well, Sony's just pointed out Brian Owen from the Argus spoke to Adam Webster after the game, and he was dealing with cramping in both halves. So credit to him for sticking with it as long as he did.
Yeah, definitely. It's going to happen when you've been out that long and you're expected to start a high-intensity Premier League game just like that. We've got another comment in about Jason Steele. I thought we had some really good saves in the first half. Aaron, our resident goalkeeper, what have you made this season? Have you been disappointed? Has it been okay? Obviously, there's been a big rotation, but I think Jason Steele was probably the one that fans want to see start mostly. Do you think he's the most assured keeper we have or not?
Assured, yes. Do I think he's a better goalkeeper? No, I don't. I think Bart just needs to learn the system more. But you only learn the system more by playing more. That's why he's chopped and changed. I think it's got to the point now where you need to make a decision on who's number one. Because I think that's the reason why we've been conceding so many goals, if I'm honest. Through individual errors, yes. But it's through stupid errors where communication is key. You want that consistency with, ideally, you want your consistency from goalkeeper and your two centre halves. They're the two you want consistent, and the pivot in the middle, to be fair. You want those four. When you're changing your goalkeepers every two games, it's not going to help anyone. The centre backs don't gain the trust they do and understanding they do if you're playing every week. And that's something that I've figured out over time, where I've been out injured, for example, for a while, and I've come back in, and it just felt a bit odd. Like they don't trust me as much as they used to, and it'd be even strange of being a professional footballer playing two games here, two games there, and then being dropped for four games and then coming back for four games. It's just you can't operate like that. Like, you look at the big clubs, you know, you don't see, you know, Ortega playing two or three games on the bounce and then Ederson will come back in for two or three games on the bounce. It doesn't work that way. As much as I understand why De Zerbi's doing it, but it's got to come to the point now you just pick one of them, and for the season anyway. And then if you don't rate Bart, and if Bart needs a loan to get game time for a season, then loan him out and keep Rushworth as number two. And then and then play him in cup. And it's all opinions in this. This is the thing. It's all different people's opinion. And I think, if I'm honest, I still think Steele was a better goalkeeper than Sanchez. I think Sanchez's attitude is always was his issue. Mm-hmm. I think Steele was a better goalkeeper than Ryan. No offense, Phil.
None taken.
He's got a Matty Ryan shirt in the background there too.
He has, yeah. I mean,
that's just the Aussie representation, let's be honest.
I mean, I won't go into real detail on why I never rated Matt Ryan, but that's a whole different podcast. And I think Steele is probably the stronger, at the moment in time, he has a better understanding of how we play. That's what makes him the better goalkeeper at this moment in time. But I still think Bart will be number one next year.
Yeah. Fair enough.
We're entering FA Cup season now, so it's a chance to give Bart some more game time, maybe that way. I don't know what your thoughts are there.
I think you'll have to. I think it's the perfect opportunity.
Yeah.
Perfect opportunity.
Talking of goalkeepers, I'm just going to drop a little spoiler in here that we have had an ex-goalkeeper of ours agree to come on the podcast. We haven't agreed a date or time yet. Aaron, have you seen this in the chat? Did you miss this?
No.
I'll tell you later, but I'm not going to reveal who it is yet.
Incorrect. You're going to tell me now.
I'll tell you in the private chat. I can't tell the subscribers. Hold on.
I might have to reach out to Matty Ryan. Let's have Aaron and
well, it might be Matty Ryan.
It
who
might
knows?
Be Matty Ryan.
So, keep an eye out for that, guys, because it will be a really exciting chat. I've got people that I've respected hugely. So there's a little clue. Phil, I want to talk about our system that we've been deploying in the last few games, really. As soon as the game starts, it becomes evident that we want to start with a three at the back in possession, and Purvis Estupiñán was deploying. I think somebody pointed out, I think it was BMR who pointed out in the chat, that he was starting at left centre back. So do you think that's Roberto De Zerbi thinking on his feet with the injuries we have and the sort of to avoid the fullback situation? Do you think?
I think so. We saw it at some point earlier in the season as well. I feel like the last time I came on this podcast after the Fulham game, we were talking about them flirting with a back three as well. I think it's just our squad being adaptive to the cards that we're being dealt. You know, we have looked a little bit, obviously when we're struggling to field fullbacks as well there, you know, we're just going to have to sort of make do with what we've got. So, I think it's just it's us trying to play to our strengths in terms of who is available and who is fit.
Yeah, that reaction that you just heard, everyone, was Aaron's reaction to the goalkeeper that we have agreed to get.
My bad, I thought I was on mute. My bad.
So there you go. It got that reaction from Aaron. So it should be a good episode, hopefully. We've just got Mark. With Sarmiento probably not coming back, do you think there's any chance Mazilu will come in and dazzle us like Messi? I think it's been reported that he's going back out on loan. I'm not sure how true those reports are, but it would be nice to have a winger that's available, right, Phil?
Yeah.
So the second half, Aaron, we ebbed, it flowed, but the breakthrough just would not come. Chance after chance after chance. West Ham had a big chance from Suchek at the far post. Couldn't quite wrap his foot round it and get it into the far corner. big let off.
Oh, huge. Yeah, no, huge let off. I think it's annoying because they've done absolutely nothing that game. But like, maybe we go back a month or so ago, that's the kind of game we'll lose. Mm-hmm. And like, I'm happy, if I'm honest, I'm happy with a point. But I was happy with a point at the start of the game. I'm happy with a point now because it's a point away from home. Yes, we should have won, but we still created the opportunities. Another day we win that 2-3-0 and without just a breeze, and it'd be, and we would breeze through it. And it's very off, a very, it's not very often I can say that about watching Brighton, where we dominate a team that much and I'm still happy to come away with a point, because yeah, it just shows 2-3 months or so ago we would 100% lost that game. 100% through that one Suchek opportunity, they would have scored it, or it'd have come from his ass and gone in or something. Like, our luck just was not in. And that's why, yeah, happy with a point. Roll on Saturday and then roll on a week off.
Yeah, definitely. Phil, one of the biggest chances of the game fell to the player that you most wanted to score the chance, Jakub Moda. First of all, tell people why the Polish footballers are of such interest to yourself, and how much of a shame it was that just didn't stay down.
I know. Well, my only trip to Brighton and the Amex this season was a flight from Poznan, Poland, where Jakub Moda started out, of course. But yeah, I'm engaged to a lovely Polish woman who lives down in Australia with me. So I'm very close to Poland in many ways these days as well. So, you know, I suppose kind of interested in Lech Poznan as well and how they go locally. So to see Jakub Moda kick the winner after what he's had to endure the last couple of years with his knee just would have been such a story. So that was a little bit disappointing. And I from a fantasy Premier League perspective as well, I played the wild card a couple of weeks ago, and the only way to sort of figure out the finances was throw Moda into my last midfield spot as well. And he, with a couple of outs this week, he was in the lineup. So that would have been quite something, but not to be. He did have to reach for it a little bit. I don't think it would be fair to say it was an easy chance. It was a great chance. There's no denying that. It was a great chance, but a tough one to kind of keep down, unfortunately. And Areola put enough pressure on the situation as well. And it flew over the bar, and unfortunately, it just wasn't to be. It just seemed, it was just one of those games, wasn't it? You know, where it was, we're either kicking it straight at the keeper, or there was that situation. There was really only once where Areola was called into action to move either side and make a really good save. And that was just how the match played out, unfortunately.
Yeah, Aaron, as a goalkeeper, if you was Areola in Areola's shoes today, you would have been pretty happy with Brighton's chances coming straight at you. Do you think it was we tested him enough or not?
I mean, it doesn't mean if they're straight at you or not, then he still needs saving. And I think the one from Lallana was a very good save, and I think the one from Welbeck as well was a good save. It's one you expect him to make. I think the Lallana one was actually a very good save. I think it's a quite awkward height where it's just about to hit the ground, but it's not. He just got a good strong palm on it. Easy day's work for him, really, if I'm honest. And but at the end of the day, if the ball's coming straight at you, you still need to save him. Doesn't matter. Yep. Doesn't matter. It's literally as black and white as that, really.
Yeah, no, that's completely fair. Let's not delay this any longer, guys. Let's talk about the man in the title, Jack Kinshelwood. Aaron, I'm going to stay with you on this one because you've seen his uncle coach us. You've seen his dad play for us. Now you're seeing 18-year-old Jack Kinshelwood come from the under-8s all the way up to the Premier League and the Europa League. Just how spectacular is that, hearing that from someone who sat there with Dean, watching those days and having that guy come all the way through?
Makes me feel old. I know that much. It makes me feel very old. Yeah, no, it's what this club's about, to be fair. It is about what this club's about. And it's good to see. It's good to see. And I think his performances have been outstanding. I don't think there's been really one poor performance from him since he's come in. And it's a testament to him. It's a testament to, you know, the youth setup of how well all these youngsters have done when they come into the team. And yeah, big shout out. I mean, his whole family is football related. I've seen Martin Hinchwood coach us from the worst losing run in history, which in the end got us relegated, but that's not the point. And obviously his dad, Adam Hinchwood, obviously playing for us in the 15 and, you know, scoring goals for us. I remember the one at Cheltenham away in the last minute to get back from a two-all draw. I remember that vividly, as I got caught on camera getting told off by a steward by leaning over the barrier, giving it the big one. That was good fun. But yeah, it's just what this club's about. And it's just nice to see. It's just nice to see.
Yeah, agreed. Phil, a Premier League Man of the Match award for our 18-year-old who is having to fill in at right back at the moment. Has been playing more advanced, definitely in the last couple of games. And Steve Sidwell, on our broadcast at least, was talking about how he's seen him evolve from centre midfielder coming into a system where De Zerbi's expecting so much more of him. But he's taken to it like he's been playing Premier League football for 10 years, right?
It's just unbelievable. And I just noticed the FPL bonus points. Areola took 3, Steele and Van Hecker each 2 each. So Hinch left off those, which was interesting. But I think we know where our man of the match might be headed a little bit later on in the show. He was phenomenal. And you know, I think finishing off a point Aaron made, his first start for the club was that bad loss to Villa, was it not, when he was playing as a genuine midfielder against one of the best midfield combinations in the league. And that obviously wasn't a great way to make your starting debut, but he's taken it in his stride. That could have gone another way quite easily, but he's been phenomenal at right back, and he's putting up a genuine case to stay there, you know, regardless of who's fit and who's available going forward. What I really love about the way he's going about it, particularly defensively, is that he's starting to change what I think is one of this club's biggest problems defensively, is that we seem to be very passive, and part of that is to not give away fouls, not concede cards, and make the opposition beat us, make the opposition score goals. But he's defending in a tighter vicinity with more aggression, and I love it. He's putting pressure on the players, on his direct opponents with the ball, and he's forcing more turnovers. He's forcing more in the game of football. I think that a passive defense can, regardless of the sport, that can be contagious, and that can lead to, you know, to just conceding more overall. I see it with the other teams that I support in different sports, namely the Green Bay Packers. And I'm scratching my head going, why do I root for all these teams that just seem to defend so damn passively? And you know, Hinchelwood might be changing the tide for us on that front, because it's infectious the way that he is creating energy in defense, and putting pressure on opposition players is going to prove to be infectious, I believe, going forward. So it's so good to see. He's creating turnovers up the ground as well. He's stopping opposition raids from balls going into the box. And I think he's making a real case to stay there off the back of it.
Yeah, as the podcast title suggests, it's certainly his spot to lose when the likes of Veltman and Lamptey, if Lamptey ever becomes fit, that is. I think you're absolutely spot on with what you say about Hinshaw's performances, Phil. I think he does what you say, but with real maturity. I don't really see him give away stupid fouls or collect stupid cards. And that, to have that at 18 years old, he's probably one of the most composed, complete academy graduates I've ever seen. And it's a huge credit to him, to the club, for bringing him through that way and allowing him to just bed into a Premier League side, a Europa League side as well, who, you know, a lot of pundits and a lot of media purr about. You know, we're still, everyone says that, oh, I think Michael Owen said it most recently, everyone's second team is Brighton. Our first team is Brighton. but there's so many plaudits for us, which is fantastic. Going forwards, it's his spot.
As you say, he's showing this real maturity, and Roberto De Zerbi is asking him to play a pretty difficult role too, where in possession, as we've sort of said, they fall into this back three set up and they're asking Hinch to get forward. He's scored a couple of really important goals for us, of course, already. And he had another chance today. He's putting himself in position to score going the other way. But he's also, it's not easy to be asked to attack when we have possession, but then be defensive as well. Don't concede going back the other way. So you're balancing this mindset of how much can I attack? How much do I hold back here and just make sure we're not conceding going the other way? And that's a tough ask of a teenager, you know, so of anyone that's, you know, under the age of 20. So credit to him.
Definitely. BMR in the comments says, an Australian that supports the Packers and Brighton, where am I? You're in the future. This is the way, as De Zerbi famously says. We won't stay too much on the game because we've got a couple of other bits to talk about after we pick our man of the match. And a 0-0 isn't very fun to talk about. So we'll come to our man of the matches now. Aaron, are you in agreement with what Phil said? Is our Man of the Match award going only one way for you or not?
No, I'm actually going to give it to Van Heek.
Yeah.
I think he was very, very good. Very, very good. I think he was just Van Heek. What the Van Heek, you know?
Exactly that.
He was just what he does. I've been so impressed with him this year.
A lot of people talk about his lack of ability with Dunk not next to him, but we're seeing that shift now, aren't we? That Van Heek, the leader,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, we are. Yeah, and I get it. I get the people's perception of that. I think, yeah, we are starting to see the change in shift now, I think, where it's going to be Van Heek and Dunk for the foreseeable, and Webster can come in if and when needed, or Igor can go in if and when needed. It's going to be who replaces Dunk at some point, where I think that needs to be looked at realistically. Not anytime soon, obviously, but at some point.
Do you think Van Heek is in line to be that leading centre-back for us? He's got that about him, do you think? Yeah.
Yeah, he does, yeah. He's got everything a modern centre-back needs, really. He's quick, he's strong. I think the only thing I'll say he needs to prove is really the ball at his feet to a certain extent to get to Lewis's level. Because obviously Lewis plays those killer passes where obviously because I think Lewis does it, Van Heek doesn't. You don't want two ball playing centre halves pinging balls left, right and centre, because that's just, of course, fucking mayhem. hence why it was always Dunk and Webster. Webster would do the simple stuff. Lewis would do the more intricate switches or play it into the pivot, and then the pivot would turn and play. Yeah, I think naturally he'll be he'll be the leader at some point.
There was one moment today where he was under a little bit of pressure with the ball at his feet and he figured his way through it. And I thought that was a growth moment for him as well. You know, there have been so many times this season where that's turned into a huge opportunity for the opposition, someone making a meal of something at the back. And it didn't really happen today with those guys. And circling back to what Az was talking about before with Steely, it just seemed, even though Dunkey was out today, it seemed like the communication was spot on between Van Heck and Steele was confident when he was coming out to kill off crosses and attacking opportunities for West Ham. And it just seems like that communication was there between those guys today. The trust was there, the understanding. And Van Hecker, he's been unbelievable. There are a few guys in the chat that are agreeing that he is man of the match. I'm going to stay on brand and give Hinch some points. The Hinch pin, as I'm calling him going forward. It doesn't matter where they play him. He's going to be outstanding, I believe. He might morph into a really strong midfielder one day as well. Who knows? We'll wait and see. Right now, he's doing an excellent job at right back for us. But yeah, credit to Jean-Paul. He's been enormous down back for
definitely.
Us.
Nick in the chat says that Van Hecker deserved the award just for his backheel clearance. I mean, the composure of the guy ever since pocketing Haaland has been next level. And that's where we saw the shift begin, which is incredible. Mark wants to give a shout out to Buonanotte, who I fully agree. First half especially, he was a real shining light in the Brighton side and wanted to get us forward. There was one moment where he went on sort of a solo run and won us a free kick sort of halfway through the West Ham half, which was fantastic. Alfie says it was there for win for us today. Yeah, absolutely. We've got to take those chances when they come. I don't know, Aaron, if you've made me change my mind and give Man of the Match to JP Van Hecker, or do I give it to the Hinch pin as Phil Coulson? Do you know what? Let's stay with the title. Let's give it to Jack Hinshelwood. I'm sure over the next God knows how many seasons that we're doing the Albion Obsessed podcast, hopefully it never ends, that we will be giving multiple Man of the Match awards to Jack Hinshelwood. I think, you know, the fact that he's come on into this team playing in Europe, a Sussex lad. I think that the chested back pass to the goalkeeper must be something learnt in Sussex. Can you confirm that, Aaron? Because there was a moment Hinshelwood did the same thing that Dunkey likes to do. Is that something they teach in Sunday Sussex League?
All I'm going to say, if my centre-half did that, I would be losing my absolute head. I can't lie. I mean, I would love my centre-half to take charge and do that. Boys, if you're listening, you know what you're doing Saturday. It's ballsy.
Yeah, definitely.
Kind of rate it. I can't lie.
Alfie is asking, how are the floods in Australia, Phil? Are you affected? I hope you're okay.
I'm all good, thankfully, where I am. But yeah, every summer there are all kinds of natural things going on in this wonderful country. There's no doubt about that.
Goodness me. So Jack Hinshelwood, I think, then outnumbers you, Aaron, I'm afraid. So he gets the Man of the Match award for today. But Van Hecker, definitely a very close second. Let's look ahead, guys, because the transfer window's open. We've had one comment about Sarmiento coming back from loan and then going back out on loan to Ipswich. First of all, Aaron, have you watched much of Sarmiento at West Brom? And do you think it's a good move for him to go to a promotion chaser?
I mean, he wasn't really playing, though, really. I know the Flair fans were buzzing to have him when he joined them in the summer, but he hasn't really... He started to play a bit more recently. He scored a really good solo goal, actually, in start of December, if I remember rightly. But yeah, I think he needs to play more. And I think Ipswich under Kieran McKenna, I think, would be a great, great shout for him to go to. And I think he'll play and I think he'll do well there.
Yeah. And he gets to meet Ed Sheeran, which I'm not jealous about at all. But hey ho. Hey ho. Phil, we spoke about Mazalu as well, the young Romanian who may or may not be coming back. But reports say he's going back out on loan. Where is the most important position, do you feel, for Brighton to strengthen? Or are they all as important as each other?
Yeah, look, I'm not... It would be wrong of me to speak to specific players that we should be targeting. It's just not my area of expertise, but I can answer the question.
Yeah, leave that for Spreadsheet King Dagan.
Exactly. But I can answer the question that you've put forward here. I think it's a central defensive midfielder, someone that can just be, pardon me, that engine room for us, that can just give us that... you know, that drive, that obviously just what we've been missing since Caicedo and McAllister have left. They were both just such hardworking options through the middle, and we've been missing that. We have. It's that simple. Hinshelwood has proven to be a really nice stopgap option for us at right back. Fingers crossed, touching wood, that Estupiñán can have a clean run of health and injury through the back half of this season now as well as our starting left back. And, you know, we know that Igor Julio can do the job for us as an option back there if needed, as that kind of backup option. Obviously, there are really strong links to a really quality fullback in January. Maybe that comes to fruition, maybe it doesn't. But if you're asking me the one position that we need to figure out in terms of quality over quantity in January, I think it's a midfielder.
Yeah, I think you're spot on. Aaron, Nick suggests that we go all out and get Calvin Phillips on loan. Would you be opposed to that, or do you not think... What would be your ideal centre defensive midfielder to come in?
I wouldn't get one in.
You wouldn't?
Not really.
Oh, interesting.
I think there's more important positions need filling than that.
Mm-hmm.
We need a fucking right back who doesn't have hamstrings like G-strings. Need a left back, in my opinion, as well, because as much as I love Igor, if he needs to start playing centre-half instead of a left back. And I still think we need a winger. I don't think the defensive midfielder is an area we need to look at, in my opinion. I think we've got Milner, we've got Gross, we've got Balbo, we've got, you know, Gilmore. There's plenty of options in there as it is.
Yeah.
So that's not an option that I would look into, and I wouldn't take Calvin Phillips. I think it would take him too long to get back to match fitness, and we will never pay his ridiculous wages and like £7 million loan fee. Are you mad?
For half a season, no thanks.
Yeah, I'd rather not. I'd rather freaking... No. Just no.
Fair enough.
Agree to disagree then, yeah. Aaron?
I just don't think there's more important positions I think we need to focus on first. I don't think we're missing Caicedo that much, in my opinion. McAllister, yes, but Caicedo, not really for me.
Wow.
I think we're playing very differently without him, and I think it's working for us to a certain extent.
Mm-hmm.
But we missed the bite, you could say, of Caicedo in the middle, but I think Gilmore stepped up more than I thought he would do.
Yeah, in my fair opinion. Enough.
And I think he's done very well in that deep line playmaking sort of role, in my opinion.
Yeah. And I assume you say right back because we need a right back just for backup for Jack Hinshelwood, because as the title suggests, it is his spot to lose. Is that right?
Right. Okay. Jack Hinshelwood is not a right back.
But it's his spot to lose.
Pascal Gross is not a right back. James Milner is not a right back.
We know that much.
Right. We certainly do.
We just need a right back. Just a right back.
Fair enough. That's fair enough. I'd love to see Jack Hinshelwood in his more natural position and see what more he can give us from a central, more attacking sort of approach to the game. Let's look ahead to Stoke in the FA Cup on Saturday. And if you're going, I hope you enjoy the very, very cold, wet Stoke on a, not on a Tuesday night, but on a Saturday. So hopefully it'll be less cold for you, but it's January.
It's
going to be cold.
Mate, it's going to be like 25 degrees at Stoke, but in the Britannia, it's going to be -4. It's fucking horrible. It's a horrible place.
Aaron, we were chatting before we went live as to who you may expect to see start there. I asked you if you would expect Dunkey to come back. You said rest him. So do you think it's going to be very much under-23s and whatever we have left of fringe players?
Yeah, I think I'd hope it'd be fringe players. Depends how much De Zerbi wants to focus on the FA Cup this year, really. Obviously, we took it quite seriously last year. Obviously, got to the semis, but with Europe this year as well, I don't think we can really go all out in the cup, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. Obviously, we haven't got another Europa League game until March, but it's not the point. I think, imagine if we win this and we get, like, fucking, I don't know, some League Two team in the fourth round and then they just go out and injure two of our main players.
Yeah. True.
And it's just all just it's stick or twist, really. Either way, people would be moaning that we should be resting players, but then if the performance isn't good enough, they'll be moaning why we didn't start those players. You can't really win in this situation.
Yeah.
And Stoke is not an easy place to go.
No. We found that out last season, didn't we? We played away last season.
Yeah, to be fair, we didn't even probably play that well, and yet we still managed to come away with a win. I mean, where are they on the table? They're
no idea.
Okay, they're 19th.
Which is pretty 19th. Much where they were last season, am I right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, their run of form is absolutely horrific.
1-0 Stoke, then.
Yep. You know what that means.
Exactly. Oh, dear. Phil, do you think the importance of the FA Cup last year was more for De Zerbi because it was an extra route into Europe? Or do you think he's a winner, he's just going to take any competition seriously, no matter what?
I think we should take this game seriously. There's a break after that as well. Our next Premier League game isn't until the 22nd of Jan. It could be a chance to see, I know he's very important for us right now, but maybe there's a chance to see Hinch playing in that midfielder role. I think it's really important that we start Evan Ferguson up front and that he starts to try and find some form back.
Yeah,
I think we do rest several of our players for sure. I'm not sure what they'll do with a Jakob Modder because he might still be working his way back slowly, and maybe the medical staff are saying give him 30 minutes and that's it for the time being. So if he is capable of playing more minutes, let's have a look at him more central as well. I know we were going back and forth about that the other day, Joe, about what his best position could be moving forward. They've been bringing him on as a wide option the last few games. Do we see him playing a more central role? Maybe have a look at him at 10 or as one of those midfield options. I'm not sure. Yeah. But I think there's a chance to play some of our regular Premier League players, but the ones that haven't been getting the major minutes right now. How many of the starting 11 do we see in that game? I'm not so sure. Maybe it's two or three. I think we definitely see Bart Verbruggen back as the goalkeeper. I'm not sure how Igor is physically. Probably a good chance to see him as one of our central defenders if he's available. And go from there. But I don't see why we don't take it reasonably seriously. Whether we again make a really deep push in the FA Cup, and maybe that's contingent on how the round of 16 goes in Europa as well. I'm not sure. We obviously didn't take Carabao overly seriously, and we saw the result there. But I don't see why we don't take this game semi seriously and just see what happens in February and March.
Yeah, why not? Let's go for some score predictions before we sign off for tonight. So, Phil, what are you thinking for the game? Do you think it'll be a nice, comfortable win?
3-1. Obviously, 2024 has brought on the clean sheets, apparently. whether that lasts or not, we'll have to wait and see. But I think we do enough. I think we play enough of our guys to score a few goals, even though Stoke might do the old, Sean Dyche routine. We'll have to wait and see. But I think we find the back of the net a few times and probably concede one going back the other way.
Fingers crossed. Aaron, I know your normal response to wanting a prediction. Let me see the team sheet first. But I'm going to push you for one anyway.
Nope.
No? All right.
Nope.
All right, fine.
Ask me Saturday at 2:00 and then I'll give you my
all right answer. Everyone tweet Aaron Saturday at 2:00 just to get his score prediction. I'm going to give my score prediction. I think we will win 2-0. I think it's going to be a really tough game. Stoke have nothing to lose in the FA Cup coming up against a Premier League side. Yeah, I think they will give us a really tough game. Happy New Year to all the subscribers who are listening today, both live and if you're listening back to this on YouTube or Spotify. It's been really great to start the year with a clean sheet, but not so great not to start the year with 3 points. If I just give a shout out to One Klopp Shop as well. 10% off if you go to their website and enter code ALBIONOBSESSED at checkout for all of your football shirt needs. I love football shirts. Phil, do you love football shirts?
I sure do.
Aaron, do you love football shirts?
I do love football shirts. Who doesn't?
There you go. Shirts. Go and get yourselves 10% off, guys. But until next time, wherever you may be, I'm not going to fuck this up, Tom. Whenever you may be, we'll see you next time. Take care, guys. Bye-bye.